Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I have a happy thought.
Here's John Williams.
A nice thought, a thing, a shout out to somebody who done me good today. Hi, it's 109. I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Ave.
Lord have mercy.
We appreciate you tuning in. We're here weekdays 1 to 3. Yesterday, 1 to 2 because of White Sox baseball. Incidentally, I learned something interesting about myself yesterday. Maybe you did too. I discovered that I'm not the Cubs fan I always thought I was. That is, I've always been a Cubs fan. Went to them, the station broadcast the games for years and years and years. Yesterday, I'm listening to the White Sox on WGN Radio take on the Cubs in a meaningless game. I was rooting for the White Sox. Holy cow! I mean, I wasn't rooting for the White Sox to anybody. I just felt it. I wanted the White Sox.
There's a pride around here, and you kind of catch the fever.
But you're a White Sox fan, right?
Well, no. My family is split. Four of us are Cubs fans. One of us is a White Sox fan. That would be my middle son. So I kind of always liked the White Sox a lot because, you know, if you have one kid who likes a team, you can't help but to like them. But there's just a fever you kind of catch. It's exciting around here.
It is around here, Kim, because we work at the station that's doing the games. And so I figured that my sort of sudden allegiance to the White Sox is because I have a personal, corporate, financial interest in the White Sox. I mean, I want the White Sox to win all their games now. And in the past, I just didn't care. I didn't pay much attention. You know, root for the White Sox, but you pay attention to the Cubs. And so yesterday, the two teams are playing, and I'm like, everybody loves Anthony Rizzo. Everybody loves Chris Bryant. Everybody loves the players of the Cubs and the Cubs. How do you not love the Cubs? I don't dislove the Cubs now, but I'm rooting for the White Sox. And I'm telling you, I didn't plan on that. It just kind of dawned on me the same way it did when the White Sox won the World Series.
Right.
In that amazing run-up, I could feel in my heart that I really didn't care.
And don't you feel, too, just like the White Sox are kind of like how the Cubs were a few years ago with the rebuilding?
I hope, don't you?
And that was really sad when they lost that key prospect.
Oh, man, I know. I'm like, oh, gee. Of course, you know, the Cubs went through that with Schwarber a couple of years
right.
ago where you thought, oh, this is going to be so much fun to watch him play. No, it's not. And then he came back and had that amazing World Series run. But when the White Sox won the World Series that year, and there I was always saying, hey, we're all for the White Sox, too. I knew in my heart. I mean, we didn't even watch all the games. Can you imagine as a Cubs fan not watching all the Cubs games in the playoffs? That's insane. Weddings were moved to watch the Cubs. And yet I didn't care that much about the White Sox. And I'm just saying that told me something about myself, that I don't hate them, but I don't love them as much as I think I do. You can feel it. So yesterday, it was the flip. I really felt it. I don't know who these people are. Ed and DJ, I'm listening to them. I really don't know their patter that well. But I find myself rooting for the White Sox. Who are these young guys? I want them to win. In fact, I wanted them to be the Cubs. Now, you don't have to feel that way. Maybe you never will feel that way because you don't work at WGN or for the White Sox. But I'm telling you, that's what I went through yesterday.
It was strange to see them play each other.
Wasn't it, though?
You're like, hold on.
My kids are fighting. Hey, kids.
Who am I supposed to root for?
I'm telling you, V, that's what it was. And my wife wasn't as, she goes, you are amazing. You know, like, not in a good way.
Like, you can just switch.
I know. And that was not a compliment. And I said, I know.
It's so amazing.
It was not that. It was not, she didn't say awesome, for instance. She said amazing, like, wow, you have a switch and you can flip it. But I guess when it comes to your bread and butter, I can. But again, I'm a very small audience. But I suspect that there are people out there who, one by one, will find their allegiance complicated. Let's just say that, complicated.
Yeah.
Because
you want to root for the underdog, too, a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, okay, they won. They're good. The Cubs are good.
Right.
They won a World Series. They're out of the slump.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So and now let's get another team. Plus, it's city pride. How are you not going to have city pride?
That's what I find myself like. For instance, when we are planning the home opener for the White Sox, and we said, well, we'll do the show. We used to do it from the Cubby Bear or someplace over by Wrigley Field for the home opener. Well, now we're going to do it someplace on the south side. So now we're shopping venues. Where are we going to go? Who are we going to party with there? Can Jim Tomey swing by? So we're doing all of that. And it's
almost a secret world you didn't even know existed.
It is.
Like you get to re-find it all right now.
Oh, absolutely. And to be honest with you, not to be too Pollyanna-ish about it, but it's like, wow, there's a whole bunch of new friends we're going to meet or make. The team, the manager, the announcers, Jim Tomey, you know, just the general White Sox and Southside-ness have been too alien to this station for too long. I was this morning at C.J. Wilson, Mazda of Countryside. They're a sponsor of ours, although that's not why I was there. I bought my car from them, and it's just about 5,000 miles old. And the strangest thing happened to my car recently. Somebody got out of the back seat. And in order to get out, we pulled the seatbelt way out so that they could get out more easily. But then the seatbelt was completely stretched out.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back in.
The door closed, and the seatbelt is now dangling along the outside of the car. The seatbelt was so stretched out that as we were then driving down the road, not realizing that the seatbelt is hanging out the door, it got caught under the wheel.
Oh my gosh.
Of the car. And pulled the, it, then it drew tight, and then it whacked up underneath the wheel well and pulled out the plastic housing that goes around the car and the wheel there, that little black frame that you have inside there. So that comes loose, and now it's dragging against the tire. You can hear it. Brrr. The force of that also snapped the seatbelt in two.
Oh, wow.
Think about that. It didn't, like, tear it out of its housing. It broke it like a piece of paper. It just tore it. It ripped the you know how hard and firm the fabric of a seatbelt is? How much force it would take to tear it like a piece of paper in half? It ripped it in half. It's a good thing nobody was sitting there, because I think that would have killed them.
That sounds like a traumatizing experience.
Well, it was. So what was really going to be traumatizing was when I took it to C.J. Wilson, Mazda of Countryside. Because I thought, I know a little bit about getting cars fixed. What do you think this is going to cost? I see Domitiz in the newsroom now, sitting where Kim Gordon was. Is that you over there, Dominator?
Yes, it is.
What do you think it costs to get the housing replaced on the wheel well of the car, that whole black shell, and then the whole seatbelt that just got torn in two violently? What's that going to run me?
That sounds like a whole different language to me. Two things I don't understand are cars and sports.
I know that, and I've asked you about those things too many times.
$5,000.
I was thinking $2,250. I was literally thinking this is a... Because they're going to say, well, you know, we've got to redo the Fratostat on this thing. You can't just throw it under your seatbelt. So I had in my mind, and I was... I so did not want to give C.J. Wilson, Mazda of Countryside, $2,000 that I was putting it off. But you got to have seatbelts working in your car. I mean, what if we took the Petersons to the movie? We would need that seatbelt in the back.
Right. But wait, was your wheel also damaged?
The wheel, the tire itself wasn't, but the housing unit underneath there, the plastic shell that goes between the metal and the wheel, yeah, that was like ripped out.
Huh. So what's it cost you?
About $230.
That's it?
That's all?
I cannot believe it. Happy birthday to me.
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy.
That's almost free. I hugged and didn't kiss, but because we don't do that anymore. But I looked at the guy. He goes, well, he comes. He says, I'll be back in about an hour. Because when I showed him what happened, and you never want to hear your mechanic or your surgeon say this. Oh, wow. You know, like, holy cow, I've never seen one of those before. Mm-hmm. He looks at it and goes, wow. So I know what wow is. That's about $2,200. He comes back an hour later. He goes, you know what? The plastic housing that ripped out around the tire, I was able to get a new clip. It wasn't damaged. We didn't have to replace it. We could just put that back in. He could have charged me $900 for that, I promise you. And I would have said, okay. And then the seatbelt thing, he said, you know, the housing wasn't damaged, and it doesn't have the certain kind of thing, da-da-da-da-da-da, so all we need is a new strap, and we're able to put that in for you, and that'll just be like $200.
Wow.
And I didn't want to say you're kidding me, because I didn't want him to rethink it. Like, I just want to go with yes. So I go, wow, well, thank you very much. So,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's pretty
standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty standard. It's about a $200 frat of stent and housing clip.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that coming.
Since you don't got to recalibrate it.
Right. Do I have to spin the wheels or not?
I wanted to tell him as he was walking away, and I was sitting there thinking, thank you, Jesus. I was thinking, I should tell him, would you check the tire? Because maybe that got damaged. But I thought, nope, he didn't see a problem with the tire. What am I looking for, trouble? And I'm not. So thank you to CJ Wilson Mazda of Countryside for being the honest service people that they are. I mean, really, they could have made $2,000 today that they did not, because they were just straight up good about it. They didn't know who I was. Da, 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 da. It was just them doing business the right way, and I appreciated that. Eric Zorn wrote in the Chicago Tribune, and I want your opinion about his piece. He said that FedEx is going to continue to do discounted business with the NRA, and Dick's Sporting Goods is no longer going to offer discounts to NRA members. Or no, Dick's Sporting Goods is no longer going to sell AR-15 type rifles. So I've heard people in the last 24 hours go, I'm going to Dick's. You know, people who don't need so much as a Frisbee, the Domati Pongos of the world, who have no business in a sporting goods store. The last time Domati went to a sporting goods store was to get change. He wanted them to break a 20. That's all Domati has to do with a sporting goods store. And yet I've heard people go, I'm going to go to Dick's. I'm going to give them some of my money. Similarly, some people, including Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune, said, that's it. I'm not shipping with FedEx. I'll walk it there before I do, because they're going to continue their affiliation with the NRA. My number's 312-981-7200. I just want your view on that. Are you going to do anything like that? And what do you think of the people who are? Are you going to do something like that? Have you thought about this in the last couple days? You are or aren't going to fly an airline. You are or aren't going to stay at a hotel or rent a car. You are or aren't going to go to Dick's or use FedEx. 312-981-7200. Your call is next on WGN. 124. Pitchfork announced its lineup in part yesterday. Elif noticed it and is featuring some of the music today. What are we listening to here?
This is Tame Impala right now.
Tame Impala? I knew that. I had an Impala once. Took it to CJ Wilson Mazda for repair.
Was it not tame enough for you?
It was not tame enough. This sounds actually pretty good. Tame Impala, 125. We asked you if you'll change your shopping habits because of the NRA boycotts or endorsements, if you will. You're going to go with FedEx? You're going to go shop at Dick's? Let's start with Noelle. You're on WGN. What do you say, Noelle? You're on the air.
Hey, John. Well, two things. First of all, if you're going to ask me about my shopping habits, I will no longer be shopping at Dick's. I am a Democrat, a liberal, and a licensed gun owner, and I have an AR-15.
So you well, so you don't fit any profile. Now, what am I going to do with that, Noelle? That's not the way it's supposed to work.
Well, you know what? Not everything fits into the same box, and yeah. I feel that I'm comfortable protecting myself and my home, and I don't think the criminals are going to turn in their guns, and I don't think that the mentally challenged are going to turn in their guns, and this is all just ridiculousness.
What about having a handgun as opposed to an AR-15?
I have both.
Yeah. Well, you see the problem? Do you see, and maybe it's rational, maybe it's not from your standpoint, but you do understand why people are upset about AR-15s.
I do understand their conception of it. However, a rational, legally owning, licensed gun owner does not use it to do mass shootings.
Yeah.
And it's all the perception of that, and criminals do.
I appreciate your listening, Noelle. I'm going to take more calls on this. What did you want to say?
Wait, John, real quick, your car?
Oh yeah,
I'm a warranty manager.
Oh yeah,
and I'm just letting you know that your seatbelt should never have been stuck in the out position. That whole repair should be covered under warranty, under residual damage. You should be paying nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a new car.
It's a brand new car.
You need to go back to your dealer and tell them to file it under warranty.
I'm going to do that, Noelle. I will report back to you.
The seatbelt should not have been stuck out.
Yeah. Well, it was.
It shouldn't have been.
I appreciate the heads up on that. Thank you. And for the unpredictable call. This is Craig. You're on the air. What do you want to say, Craig? Breaker, breaker, Craig. Go ahead, Craig.
Until the furrow blows over, everybody's going to stop selling guns. Once the furrow is done, they'll resume selling guns. They're losing too much money if they don't.
Yeah, you're talking about the sporting goods store. It's 127. More about this later on, and you can text your thoughts to 312-981-7200. Thank you, Domiti. It's 136. Featuring music from the just-announced Pitchfork lineup. This, of course, is the Lennon Sisters. Who are we listening to here?
This is Kelly Lee Owens.
Kelly Lee Owens. That's not bad. You're not a fan?
It's not great either.
No, you're the music blogger. By the way, how do people listen to, how do they find, you can lose the music, Ella. How do people find out what you're saying about music? Don't you have a blog or a site you write on?
I do, but I haven't actually posted my first one on this on WGN's website yet. So wait until tomorrow. I can tell you then.
Tell us tomorrow. It's 1:37 on WGN. Here's what you told me about the past half hour's conversation. I asked you if you are more likely to shop at Dick's or less. For that matter, are you more or less likely to use FedEx? They're on different positions about NRA affiliation, those companies. And some of you said this, hey, John, what is that woman that called in need her AR-15 for? This one says, John, I'm not a gun guy, but everybody you've spoken with in this matter said the AR-15 is the most sold gun. Is this true? Elif looked it up and said the most sold rifle in America is the AR-15. Does that compare to handguns? We're looking it up. John, that woman's right to own an AR-15 should never override the rights of innocent people and kids being shot up by that gun. From the 262 area code, I went to Dick's Sporting Goods today to buy something simply because of their decision. From 847, hi, John, I'm on my way to Dick's Sporting Goods now. Going to find something to buy and tell the manager why I'm there. 224 said, I will never shop at Dick's again. There is no such thing as an assault rifle. That's just a label the media puts on it to sell an agenda. I have specifically not said assault rifle since this story went down. I know that's a sticking point for some folks, and it's not a necessary one. You haven't heard me say that. And finally, from the 630 area code, I would bet gun sales are a small piece of Dick's pie. Probably won't hurt them financially. I'll talk more about that this week and the next week and probably the next week. The Mincing Rascals are sure going to talk about that when we record our podcast on Thursday. Do you listen to The Mincing Rascals? It's a podcast that we do with friends of ours from the Chicago Tribune and some of us here at WGN Radio, and that will definitely be a topic. And maybe we'll talk, too, about what Rajna Krishnamurthy did. He and members of the House Oversight Committee sent a letter a couple of days ago to General Kelly saying, so what's the deal now with Jared Kushner? That's not a direct quote, but they asked the president's chief of staff for a clarification on what the president's son-in-law's security clearance is, and if he is still on a temporary one, or if he is no longer on the highest clearance, then is he in fact seeing stuff that is top secret? So they asked for some clarification. And shortly thereafter, General Kelly announced that Jared Kushner no longer has that top secret clearance. I talked to Rajna Krishnamurthy just before the show today, and I asked him if he thought that was a coincidence, or did his letter prompt all of that?
Probably our letter had something to do with it, because there's so many people who are at this point questioning, you know, why all these people with interim security clearance, in some cases for over a year, still have access to, you know, top secret information.
But it wasn't just Jared Kushner whose status got moved down. Didn't General Kelly issue a memo that said the following people or other individuals will also not see top secret information?
We have not received that list of people. In fact, today we just sent another letter to General Kelly requesting that list. You know, quite frankly, John, what we're concerned about is that everybody with interim clearances pending for so long should have their access downgraded, especially, you know, potentially members of the first family.
Why do you want to see the full list?
Well, for instance, Jared Kushner happens to be married to somebody who had interim security clearance for just as long as he did and wasn't able to get their full background, full security clearance. You know, if he has his downgraded but his wife does not, that's a problem.
Do you know what her status is?
We don't. That's partly why we wrote the letter to General Kelly today. The other thing we inquired about, quite frankly, is whether there's any safeguards against selectively declassifying documents to Jared Kushner or anybody else on that list of people whose security clearance is downgraded, because that would just be an end run around what General Kelly's trying to do.
Do you know why Jared Kushner does not have top security clearance? What has been the delay?
We don't know. What is true is that generally, in cases where the FBI cannot grant permanent security clearance, is usually because of a few things. Either the person's financial situation is very challenging. In this case, we know that Jared Kushner's company, the Kushner family's company, owes a lot of money to a lot of people, and they are actively trying to get relief from that debt, and they're going to various foreign governments and foreign entities to talk about it. The second thing is, are there any questionable connections to foreign powers or foreign governments, and have they been disclosed? You may have read about this, but last year, almost a year ago, when he filled out his security clearance form, there were over 100 errors and omissions in his security clearance form for failure to disclose contacts with foreign entities.
It seems to me as though the president ought to be able to choose whoever is a senior advisor he wants. And if it's ill-advised to the rest of us, his son-in-law can be that person. Why not enable Jared to do his job as well as possible rather than putting up all of these roadblocks?
It's about it's about our safety and endangering national security, John. It's not the issue of whether he's the president's son-in-law. He has access to the president's daily briefing. He has access to information about our human assets overseas and other sources and methods of intelligence collection, or he did until yesterday. At the same time, we know that various governments have already targeted him as somebody over whom they can gain leverage. Given his personal financial situation and family's financial situation, the fact that he has been going to other places around the world and meeting privately with different officials to try to sell their properties and get debt relief at the same time. This is a very troublesome situation, and nobody should have access to that classified information at the same time they're doing business with people who want access to that information.
What does this say about the responsibilities the president has charged him with?
His portfolio is rather large. I think that you're correct. He's supposed to be trying to solve Middle East peace. If you don't have access, or you're not going to have access to classified information and intelligence, how are you possibly going to be able to do the job of addressing Middle East peace? You can easily see a situation where he's in the room and H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, or somebody else walks in with the latest developments regarding, the situation in Israel or the Middle East, and they have to ask Jared Kushner to leave the room because he no longer has access to that classified information. That's kind of an untenable position.
Well, do you know how these things work? That is, if there's other people in the room that will have that information, what's to keep them from discussing it with him, including the president?
Well, you're prohibited under law from disclosing this information. Now, the president has a special power, which I alluded to before, which is that let's say there is a document, and let's say it's been marked top secret SCI, which is sensitive compartmentalized information, or top secret, which is the level right below. He can selectively declassify that document just so Jared Kushner can view it However, when he does that, Jared Kushner can then be free to share that with other people. That is why we asked in this letter today for the president not to selectively declassify documents to any of the people whose security clearance was downgraded.
Is it possible that he could do the job without this top clearance? I mean, you and I don't know, do you get to see top secret stuff? Do you get to see secret stuff?
Yes. You know, I'm on the House Oversight Committee, and so we are routinely asked to view these types of documents, but it's a big process, John. I mean, we go into this kind of basement room in the Capitol, and we leave our cell phones outside, and we go in and review any and all documents that we have to, and then we have to leave everything back behind, and we are not allowed to take any notes. So there's a real protocol with regard to this stuff. That's why it's really important that, you know, people whose security clearance was downgraded don't have access to it. Certainly, you know, Jared Kushner.
But it surprised me to see how boring some of that stuff is, or not salacious it is. I mean, I know you can't tell me anything specific, Congressman, but describe for me generally what you see in that situation.
As a category of information that would fall within top secret, the top secret category, it'd be the name of potential assets to the intelligence community, or sources for the intelligence community in foreign countries. You can easily see a situation that if any of those documents got in the hands of our adversaries, who knows what would happen to those individuals that are identified either as sources or are our own agents.
Rajana Krishnamurthy, the Illinois congressman, is on a phone line. General Kelly says that even with the downgraded security clearance, Jared Kushner can still do the job, that is, negotiate peace in the Middle East, deal with our Asian partners, etc. I don't know if you have an opinion about that. You know, your concern is that he not see documents he should not see. If the administration adheres to that, do you care if he's still doing his job, if General Kelly thinks he can do it well?
It all depends on how his job is defined, John. I honestly don't know what he does in the White House. I don't understand what exactly is his portfolio. But if any of those duties requires reviewing classified information, especially if it relates to foreign policy, I'm not sure how you execute those duties if you can't have access to that information. I think that you're basically blind, and you can't really advise the president. You can't discuss any of these matters with him or his top aides.
You've asked General Kelly for the full list of people whose status has been downgraded. You have not heard from him. Do you expect that you will? What will you do if you don't?
We sent that today, so we hope that he will respond to our letter. I should also tell you one other thing. This is not merely a Republican-Democrat thing. Republican Chairman Trey Gowdy of my Oversight Committee actually requested considerable information about the security clearance process from General Kelly. I believe he did that last week, and the deadline is today to respond. As you know, Trey Gowdy, is no Democrat. He's the Republican chair of this Oversight Committee. And so I think there are just a lot of questions right now. As you know, this originated from the Rob Porter issues related to domestic violence or abuse with regard to his ex-wives. And now it's kind of morphed into something that's bigger and more important.
These things always work that way, don't they? I mean, there'll be an investigation into one thing, and suddenly we go, wait a minute, well, who else has clearance and why, and what do we do about that?
Especially with the reporting about foreign governments targeting Jared Kushner, I think that just raises all kinds of alarm bells around here, because apparently, and again, this is reported in the Washington Post, H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, learned about these particular meetings with foreign entities from our independent intelligence gathering that's going on. In other words, it's not like Mr. Kushner walked into H.R. McMaster's office and said, hey, just FYI, I met with these different folks in Russia. I just want to keep you in the loop. Mr. McMaster learned about this through our intelligence community. which is just an odd way of learning about, you know, one of your colleagues down the hall meeting with a foreign government.
Illinois Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy, a member of the House Oversight Committee and one of the central players now in this back and forth with General Kelly. We will be in touch, Raj. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
He spoke to us just before we went on the air today, couldn't join us live, but that information is only an hour or two old, so I think it's still pretty relevant. And he's always a good guest. We appreciate him joining us. The Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park will match donations this week up to $1,000. Money goes to the Lurie Cancer Center, the University of Chicago, the City of Hope. Your donation will be doubled this week if yours is among the first $1,000 donated, and we have not hit that yet. You got 50 bucks you want to help out? Now it's 100. You got 5? Now it's 10. Somebody gave 34 yesterday. Now it's 68. Somebody gave 100. Now it's 200. Go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. We go back and forth between pinning it to the top. If it's not there, just scroll down a tiny bit. Or visit Arthur Murray Dance with Chicago Celebrities, AMDWCC.com. Arthur Murray Dance with Chicago Celebrities. AMDWCC.com, and get your donation doubled this week. Thank you, Doctor, over at Joint Relief Institute. I have been practicing this dance. It's a 2-minute quick step, which is the wrong dance for me because I can't quick step, and it goes 2 minutes. I've been working on it for about 4 weeks.
You're getting very good.
Thank you.
You are.
Don't have to say that.
No, because the videos on Facebook you're posting, you can definitely see.
That's the video
progress
I just put up. And you see me now doing some quick step in
there,
don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can almost not tell who the professional dancer is.
God love you. So the funny thing is, though, so that's like, it's a 2-minute routine. We put 20 seconds up. It's more than enough. But it's taken me all this time just to learn where my feet go and what the dance is. Now we have to work on staging and my smile and stuff.
Performance.
Like,
it's all about the performance.
That's what I've been told. She said, dude, this is not performing. This is like going, wow, I did it.
Now do it full out.
I know.
No, that was full out.
That was it. That's all I got. So we're working on it. Can you make that donation? Check out my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
I'm angry.
Here's John Williams.
State of Illinois ranking in this U.S. News and World Report thing. Of course, I can't say I'm really shocked. We're 35th.
Lord, have mercy.
They got us at 35 out of, that's right, 50 states. Very good. 35th. Does that feel about right to you? Are we,
No.
Okay, 1 to 50. You've been to a few of them. Maybe you've been to a lot of them. Where should Illinois rank in all of the states?
Anywhere above Iowa.
Iowa's number one, Kat.
Well, we're number one.
Then we're number half. Minnesota's 2, Utah 3, North Dakota 4, New Hampshire 5. So notice that you've got some states in this part of the woods, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, they all touch. And then you've got Utah out west and New Hampshire out east, and then they go on and on and on.
I've actually never been to any of those states.
Well, I've been to 3 of them, and they're fine. They're fine. But here's the thing. 80% of Illinois is Chicago. 79% of the state's population lives in the metropolitan area of Chicago. We looked it up. 12.8 million folks in the state, and 9.5 of them live in the 8-county area. So this isn't just about Illinois. This is really Chicago versus the world. And you're telling me that it would be better to live in Iowa than to live in Chicago? You're telling me that North Dakota is a better place to live than Chicago?
Well, maybe they are taking the whole state, and that's why, in comparison to every, or I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
There's too many things in.
Downstate is poor, and downstate is different than Chicago, and downstate is prettier than Chicago, right? You've got Shawnee National Forest and the Illinois River Valley and stuff like that. So, I've lived in Carbondale, Edwardsville, Peoria. I know the state pretty well, but the votes, the people, the economy, the health care, and the problems are all in Chicago. And taken together, I would much rather live in Chicago than Iowa or I don't know, Minnesota. I lived in Minnesota. That would be my number two. The Twin Cities are a place to aspire to. They're wonderful. But it's not as vibrant a city as Chicago. The Twin Cities are not.
What were they taking into consideration here?
Healthcare, education, economy, opportunity, infrastructure, crime and corrections, fiscal stability, and quality of life. And guess where we really tanked?
Security.
Security. So
fiscal stability.
And
I bet.
Fiscal stability.
1 to 50. Fiscal stability. We're number 50.
Oh. Well, we are broke. We know that.
I know. That's the thing. So if you had wiped that out, man, we might have jumped up. Way up there above Montana.
Who needs that?
Crime and corrections. We're actually in the middle of the pack. We're number 24. You know who put some of this together? Tim Smart. He is over at U.S. News and World Report. He's been listening to our little rant here. Hi, Tim. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, John. I think I've got some defense to work on here.
What's the matter with you people over there?
Well, we're from Washington. We're here to help, you know.
Yes, exactly. You're part of the swamp. You're the problem. You're the executive editor for U.S. News and World Report. We really appreciate your helping us out here, Tim. You've heard my theory and thoughts about this. Talk to me about what we've said so far.
Well, I think you're spot on. I mean, obviously, coming in last in fiscal stability with the economic and budgetary problems that Illinois has had in recent times, that hurts you pretty badly. Also, we had a new category this year, quality of life, and that's broken down into two areas, the social environment, and that includes things like voter participation, community engagement, but also the natural environment, which includes things like air pollution, water quality, drinking water quality. And frankly, you didn't do so well there. You came in 47th, largely, I think, because of the industrialization of the state in and around, you know, Chicago, obviously, the air pollution.
Yeah.
A lot of that's historic. I mean, it's things that have been going on for a long time and take a long time to improve.
But are you? But does it give you pause if you come up with this rubric and you input all the numbers? It's a formula that you all have designed. I mean, it's somewhat subjective, however, you know, scientific it is. You explain your method in the article. But here's my point. If after all of that, you go North Dakota's 4, Illinois is 35, does that make you rethink your logic on this?
Well, last year, Massachusetts was the number one state, and Massachusetts fell 8 places this year. And they asked a lot of questions of us also. And I think, I think that what we found is that on the metrics that we use, and there are 77 metrics across 8 categories, and you listed all the categories, some of the rural states do better, maybe because they don't have as diverse populations or they don't have as many different kinds of people to feed or to provide health care for. Maybe they're a little bit more stable and uniform. You know, Iowa, you mentioned, Minnesota, they've done well. North Dakota, I think, did well because, you know, its economy and its fiscal stability. It may not be everybody's choice of a state to live, but I think, you know, if you looked at a state where people historically have wanted to live, California doesn't come in that highly either. You know, so it is one of those things sometimes where when you take a lot of metrics and mash them together, you know, we try to apply a smell test, if you will, at the end. We make sure that something hasn't, you know, rigged it in a way that would benefit one state over another. And, you know, we have had change. And Nebraska came into the top 10 for the first time. I think Nebraska is a state that's changing, you know, from just a purely agricultural state. There's, you know, changes afoot there. But I think where Illinois gets hurt is that It doesn't have many things that it's highly ranked in. It's mostly ranked in the middle to the sort of second half of the list.
And let me throw out some things that Illinois does well, and tell me if we get credit for this in your metric, okay?
Okay.
Our downtown, our skyline, our beautiful city, our city parks.
Restaurants.
Our restaurants, our theater scene. How are we doing so far? I mean,
lakefront. Did you get
our
that?
Lakefront. Our lakefront is really a destination unto itself.
Museums.
Our museums. Our museum campus, best in the world.
Well, I don't think any of those are in the metrics, really.
Oh.
It's, Now, I think within the metrics that we have for the state as a whole, housing affordability, you come in at number 16, road quality at number 23, high-speed internet access, number 13, actually do pretty well, low smoking rate at 18, and low suicide rate at number 6. So maybe people are killing themselves because the Chicago is such a great place to live.
Proximity to water is a mitigating factor on suicide rates across the world. You know,
So basically, if we were logical, we would be living in those top five places, but maybe we don't pick places to live logically.
No, but think about the first part of that. If we were logical, if you're going to, where should you live, we would all pack up and move to Nebraska, right. North Dakota, or Iowa. And I'm thinking, like hell, we're going to do that. You can't answer this question, maybe, Tim Smart over at U.S. News, but I wonder if all of us packed up and moved to those places, would we be a lot happier? I mean, they're the best places to live, right? These are the best states to be in. I wonder if I would change my tune if I were talking to you from New Hampshire or Utah right now.
Well, we did, in fact, talk to people in Iowa and Utah, and they seem to be very, very happy. One of the things that is interesting is that young people in particular, like in Illinois, the growth of the young population, you rank 40th for that. But one of the states that ranks really highly in that category is Idaho, which also ranks is a state that more people, have had more population growth than any other state on a percentage basis. And what we found out, because we sent someone to Idaho to do some reporting, was that the young people that once were going to Silicon Valley or they were going to Seattle, you know, to be part of Google or Amazon or Starbucks or whatever, now they're going to Boise, Idaho. That's the hot new place if you're 20-something. So I think, I think the big cities are attractive to people, but also I think a lot of the younger generation may not have the same interests that you or I might. They may not care whether there's good museums or not. They may care whether they can go skydiving or, hiking and stuff like that.
They don't know what they're missing. I'm angry at those people. And I appreciate your humoring me on this. And I just want to point something else out, too. So I'm looking at the list, and, Iowa, Minnesota, the top states, right? Almost all of the top states have something that's number one or two in a given category. Iowa is number one for infrastructure, number three for health care. North Dakota is number one for quality of life. New Hampshire is number one for opportunity. So the ones in any given category tend to cluster towards the top. And then the 50s in any given category tend to be in the worst states as well. Louisiana, Mississippi, New Mexico, yes. West Virginia, Alabama own the 50s. And then there's this outlier called Illinois. We're really a 20-something state. Until you get to fiscal stability, I could say responsibility, and quality of life. And I mean, what an unfortunate self-inflicted wound fiscal stability is, because that's our own doing. We got nobody to blame but ourselves on that,
right. Right. You're right. In most of the other categories, you're in the 20s or in some cases, high 20s infrastructure, you're number 13. So if we gave more accounting to reliability of the electrical grid or the, public transit usage, you're number five. Well, that's right up there probably with New York.
And good, lucky for us, I guess, for ways that I maybe don't appreciate. But I'm thinking if anybody is defensive about this like me, or if anybody's angry about this, then I think, okay, look at that number 50, you guys, Chicago and Illinois. All the resources perfectly situated for a corporate headquarters, yada, yada, yada. And we are number 50 for fiscal stability. I presume that's because the state's in debt. We don't even pay our lottery winners on time. I'm not making that up. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, no, it is debt, long-term and short-term, and pension obligations.
Oh, yeah, that's what everybody's thinking about when I talk about this. Well, our ridiculous pension situation. We weren't we were taking money out of the money that was supposed to be going to pensions, and we were doing silly stuff with it. We were doing the wrong stuff with it. Where were you when I needed you, Mr. Smart? You could have saved us from this. it's really an interesting list, and maybe it's a wake-up call to some of us to either move to Utah or to fix what ails the state, because compared to other places, we're not bad, except for that quality of life and fiscal stability thing. All right.
Well, you know what you got to do your work for, you know?
Yeah. By the way, some of the texts include, hey, John, North Dakota is awesome. North Dakota's beautiful. North Dakota is a place for jobs. The wages are high there. But North Dakota is boring socially. It doesn't, it has the state of one of our smaller cities. The population is the same as Naperville, for crying out loud. I want to just comment on one thing, though, since we're talking about that, and then I'll let you go, Mr. Smart. When you were describing Iowa, you said that it does not have diverse populations. And I think I know what you meant. But when I look at Iowa, I see it as, however stable a state, a very white agriculture manufacturing state that doesn't have the diversity and the problems, but also the richness that a Pennsylvania or a New York or an Illinois have. How is a lack of a diverse population an asset for a state?
Well, I don't think it is an asset, and it's more diverse, I think, than people might think, or that it historically has been, because it is changing, as are many states. All states, really, in fact, are changing their populations quite significantly. I think what I meant was is that if you have a more diverse state or more diverse population, you might have to provide more and different services to accommodate them, and that may mean that, for instance, that it's harder, say, to provide access to health care at the same level if you're providing it to different age groups, different, you know, genders and that sort of thing. That's really what I meant.
If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a magazine like U.S. News and World Report. Tim Smart, the executive editor over there. Was that you I saw on TV on the CBS Morning News the other day?
No, that was my boss. That was the editor, Brian Kelly.
I hear
that. I will tell you, he worked for the Chicago Sun-Times back in the day, so he is a very, very fond fan of Chicago.
As are we, and we sure appreciate your help today. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing, John.
Have
nice
a good day. Likewise, it's 2:21, and this is WGN. You know about the Art Institute. There's the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and they're having this event I was talking about called Beautiful Night. 30 pieces will be auctioned. They're produced by the faculty and the students at the school. You can see them online right now. They're gorgeous. In fact, they have an online auction for the items that'll raise money for the school and the scholarships they're providing for young people. But they've got a fancy hoo-ha coming up as well. Friday, March 2nd at 7 p.m., it's a kind of cocktail party. They'll have music. They'll have these art pieces that you can see and bid on. There'll be hors d'oeuvres and cocktails. It's a really fun, elegant evening. And it's just a great way to support the school. Lisa Wainwright put this thing together, as I understand it. And she's on the phone right now. Hi, Lisa. It's John Williams. How are you?
Hi, John. Just great.
You are the School of the Art Institute Dean of Faculty and Art Curator for the Beautiful Night event, right?
I sure am.
So where is this? Is this going to be at the school or somewhere nearby?
No, this is at Mana Contemporary down the street, which hosts a number of artist studios and some great party space, a good dance floor, that's to be emphasized.
What are you going to do with the money that y'all raise?
We are giving that money to our students. It's a scholarship event, so we're hoping to raise significant funds for our undergraduates and for our graduate students.
Somebody told me, too, that I think there's this notion that it's almost inaccessible for public school students, that it's expensive, and that for some kids in Chicago, who, Lord knows we have talent, they might not think about this place. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, you know, we have many, many efforts now to reach the Chicago public school system. We have what's called the CAP program, the College Arts Access Program. That's a 3-year college bridge program designed for our local students who are interested in studying art and design, so they begin to take classes with us, and then they get into the school. We have a robust arts education program where we're in the CPS system. Our young grad students who are working in that field are in the schools. We have a really important program now down in North Lawndale, our Homan Square campus, offering arts education. So we are making great strides in being very present in the Chicago scene.
It's called Beautiful Night. So here's how you remember the website, SAIC, School of the Art Institute of Chicago, SAIC.edu/beautifulnight.
That's it.
And what's the highlight going to be? Is it the art itself and the it's a paddle auction, right? People are going to be bidding, correct?
Yeah, there's a paddle auction, a silent auction, and we have four pieces that are going to be auctioned live. So that's going to be very exciting. But we have some remarkable work.
Yeah.
Chicago's probably familiar with the Crown Fountain, right? The
yep.
Jaume Plenza. He has given us, because he taught here, he has given us a beautiful sculpture. We have got a Nick Cave sound suit. Nick Cave is very well known around the country, around the world. It's a really diverse range of media, photographs and paintings. There's a light installation for the house. There's digital simulations. There's all sorts of fantastic media that represents the range of what we teach here at the School of the Art Institute of
Chicago.
I
was glad to see the media that diverse. Lisa
yeah.
Wainwright, School of the Art of Art Institute, Dean of Faculty, and the art curator for this event. Remember, SAIC, School of the Art Institute of Chicago, SAIC.edu/beautifulnight. Let's do more together sometime. I want to help you guys any way we can here at WGN, Lisa.
Sounds great.
This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, page one of the Chicago Tribune. Obama pitches renewal. Guess who was in town? Former President of the United States, Barack Obama, selling, if you will, his center. It's not a library, it's a center on the South Side. Blair Kamen and Lolly Bowen wrote about it in the Chicago Tribune, page one today, and Blair's in our studio. Mr. Kamen, welcome back. How are you?
Good to see you, John. I'm good.
Were you at that hoo-ha last night?
I was indeed.
Did you know that the president was going to be there?
Maybe
a birdie told you.
Lolly saw some people with earpieces in their ears, so we had an inkling that someone important might show up.
Why did he show up for that?
He's a closer. He's trying to close the deal on his presidential center.
What was the event about last night?
The event was about yesterday. Presenting his vision for the presidential center to members of the community. It's been characterized as a pep rally by opponents of the center. But you know, it kind of put together their ideas, which have to do with giving the South Side the kind of parks that you see on the North Side, with creating economic development down there. Those are, you know, and also Obama spoke about the controversial subject of displacement and gentrification.
Yeah. This is privately funded, right?
The center itself, a 19-acre parcel in Jackson Park, would be privately funded. That would be about $350 million in construction costs, $500 million total.
Gosh.
The infrastructure, so that's private, not out of your taxpayer's wallet. But the infrastructure, we learned last week, is estimated to – the infrastructure to support it in terms of widened roads, underpasses, other things, is estimated to cost about $175 million, according to the city of Chicago.
And I'm not going to ask you just now about where the underpasses go and what streets get cut, because that's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think 175 is a fair trade for the 350 plus you're going to get? Is that a good investment in the state's infrastructure, revenue, capital, that sort of thing?
Well, let me put it this way. There were people, of course, as you would expect, who said, oh, you know, taxpayer leech, how could Obama be doing this? But yesterday, the spokeswoman for Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican, said that he would be open to working with the General Assembly on helping to fund the infrastructure improvements. So I think that tells you right away that this is likely to be a pretty good deal for the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago.
Well, if we're going to give big companies, charge them zero in taxes, mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going to tell big companies, come here, bring your people here, it'll be great, you'll employ people. I know that it's not a manufacturing plant, the Obama Center, but I'm just talking about giving the store away to businesses that make zillions of dollars anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we invest in our own and do something we want to do, like putting up a world-class library and center?
Yeah.
For my $175 million, I'm in.
Okay.
Whatever my share of that is.
There you go.
Yeah. What's the deal about calling it a library, calling it a center?
Sure. Traditionally, presidential libraries have housed the documents of a president's tenure in the White House. In this case, the Obama Foundation is not going to do that. They are going to have those documents stored in a facility outside Washington, D.C., run by the National Archives and Records Administration. Why are they doing that? Because it frees them up from the federal government's requirement that they raise a certain amount of money for an endowment. In other words, it gives them more financial leeway. They're also saying basically that a mausoleum-like library containing a lot of documents that scholars look at isn't going to do much for economic development and urban regeneration on the South Side.
So what's going to be inside their version of this then?
So their version calls for three buildings, a museum tower, which will be 235 feet tall. That's controversial. And two other buildings that along with the museum tower, wrap around a plaza along Stony Island Avenue. And those are a forum building, which contains an auditorium and a restaurant, and another building that may house a Chicago Public Library branch.
And a shared workspace for people that want to use it? Did I read that as well or no?
Not
a big part of it if it is.
There might be a studio that Barack Obama has talked about, a recording studio where someone like Chance the Rapper or Bruce Springsteen might hold workshops for people who are interested in...
Here's the sentence I'm reading in your story today. He also expects the president, the center, to be a catalyst for other development and a model for how to create an inclusive workspace. Mm-hmm. I guess that's different than a shared workspace. That's kind of a thing that happens these days.
Right.
Talk about the architecture. You're the architecture critic in town. What do you make of the aesthetics of the building?
I've been skeptical of the tower design. I think that it is moving in the right direction. I think its purpose is to kind of create a landmark for the South Side, a region or a part of the city that's often overlooked. It's supposed to represent Obama's presidency and also act as a kind of beacon for the South Side.
Mm-hmm. Describe it. It looks a little obelisk.
So it's kind of it's like a truncated obelisk. It's a slant-walled building. And initially it looked pretty what I would call pyramid-like or pharaonic. It had a lot of blank stone walls. And they took that criticism and I think accepted it and made the building more transparent. A version of it that was made public in January suggested that there might be a kind of screen-like facade over portions of the building that would be made up of letters suggesting the importance of speeches and words in Obama's presidency.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Sure it is.
It's getting better, but we don't know a lot about the materials. We don't know a lot about a lot of things, and it's I don't think it's cooked yet.
Okay, this is I'm not going to say a sentence I have no right to say because I'm not an architecture critic.
Go ahead.
I don't even know what it means. But I didn't find even the improved version very aspirational. Mm-hmm. I go, it's a big building, and now it's got some letters on it. I mean, I don't know what we look at architecturally in Chicago and go, wow, now that's a building. Trump Tower is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Hancock is beautiful. Mm-hmm. This thing I didn't think, and it's funny because Hancock is kind of blah, and we didn't love it when it started, but when it first went up, but I just wasn't that impressed. I didn't go, wow, now that's Obama.
Well, it's not a wow building. The architects are Todd Williams and Billy Chen, and they are not known for doing wow buildings. Their buildings are subtle, severe, austere, but they're also very good. And so it's not the kind of thing that like a Calatrava building, like the art museum edition in Milwaukee that say looks like a bird and you're going to go, wow, you know, that's cool. They don't do that. And Obama's sort of like that himself. You know, he's not the kind of, you know, he's not a one-liner kind of president.
No. Let me ask you about this. Blair Kame is in our studio, architecture critic, Chicago Tribune. Page one story today with his colleagues. They're writing about Obama pitches renewal. Why is it such a sell job? Why has it been so hard for the president and his team to sell what I see as a godsend to that part of town?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is that the Presidential Center is going to be located in Jackson Park, which was designed originally by Frederick Law Olmsted, a great landscape architect who designed Central Park in New York, Prospect Park in Brooklyn. So there's an aesthetic objection, which is that in the view of some, the center is a desecration of Jackson Park, and that there shouldn't be a tower this tall in it, that the roads that Olmsted designed for the park should remain in place rather than being closed down. I happen to disagree with that vehemently. I think closing Cornell is actually a brilliant – Cornell Drive, a six-lane road that cuts through the park, is a brilliant idea that would create a southern version of the museum campus. Okay, that's number one, aesthetic. Number two has to do with politics and benefits and displacement and gentrification. The irony, critics are saying, is that Barack Obama, the former community organizer, could be behind a presidential center that will displace some of the very people that lifted his political career. They're saying that unless guarantees are put in place, rents will rise, people will be forced out of their apartments over time because they won't be able to afford living there.
But the physical structure itself won't displace anybody. It's the concern that gentrification will happen and that these people will be pushed out. Yeah. And the president addressed that, and he said that this would be a problem for Malia's kids, not for anybody in a house in Chicago right now. Mm-hmm. And I thought that seems a little, I don't know, snarky for something that's that real for people. How did you hear that?
I heard it within the context of him trying to say that we need to strike a balance between economic development and preventing displacement. That's the balance that ideally he wants to strike. Now, how do you do that? Woodlawn's starting to develop already. It is still a largely poor, overwhelmingly African-American neighborhood. And yet, if you go through it, as I did just the other day, amid the vacant lots that kind of gap tooth many of the blocks, you see, you know, a new development, a new housing here or there. And you know that developers who are, you know, smart people are already advertising the proximity to the Obama Presidential Center, the remade Jackson Park, etc.
Okay, but when they put the United Center on the west side, you don't see a lot of fine restaurants and development around there. And Sox Park doesn't have that on the side. Well, the west side is getting
it. The west side is...
Shut my mouth.
Yeah.
But do you see my point? Is it possible that you'll put this centerpiece here and then, in fact, everybody won't come there? Do you think this will be the magnet?
I think there's a much better chance in the United Center. The United Center was essentially the worst type of redevelopment possible. It's just a big building surrounded by a parking lot. Zero effort to work with the neighborhood around it initially, although over time the Bulls and Blackhawks have done a better job at engaging with the community. Here, I think there's no question that the center is likely to act as an engine for economic development.
Well, what do you think would be down there then? Restaurants, shops, bookstores, condos?
Sure. Well, first of all, just housing. You're going to have, you've got a lot of vacant lots in Woodlawn, which is the neighborhood directly to the west of the Obama Center site. Lots of vacant lots. It's near the University of Chicago, and it's near the thing that always is, that is worth its weight in gold in Chicago. The lake.
Yeah.
Right?
Will this be on the lakefront or have a view of the lakefront?
The Obama Center?
Yeah.
So the Obama Center is west of Lakeshore Drive. It's just south of the Museum of Science and Industry. And the idea is to create a synergy, a kind of campus with that Museum of Science and Industry. But from the top of the building, there's going to be like an area where you can, you know, just a public space where you can go up, look out over the park, look out over the lake, see the skyline. So it takes advantage of its proximity to the lake.
I got to go. When will I be able to go into it? When is it going to be built and I can walk in the door?
Right. So groundbreaking is supposed to occur later this year, and it's supposed to open in 2021.
You optimistic about that?
Developers are always unrealistic with their timetable. So
this is 2018, but really, if it was done in 3 or 4 years, hooray! I'm okay with that.
Maybe 2022, 2021, 2022, who knows? But in other words, I think that, John, it's likely to get a political approval in Chicago by the city council and the plan commission and the mayor. There's a federal review process that's going on that's a little more complicated, and that could have some twists and turns to it beyond beyond the review process in Chicago.
You've been writing a lot about this, and brilliantly as ever, along with, did I say that name correctly, Lolly Bowen?
Lolly Bowen, who's a terrific reporter who I'm privileged to be working with on this story.
And we're privileged to read it. Thanks for coming down and saying hi, Blair.
Thank you, John. Always good to talk to you.
Came in at the Chicago Tribune. Anna DeVlantis, Ro Khan in the studio. I'm out of here in 42 seconds. Make the most of this special time.
Okay. All right.
It's our special time together. Thank you for making
it so significant. JB Pritzker is going to join us in just a few minutes.
How about that?
Yes, he's going to be in studio here. Alderman Brendan Riley is going to be here talking about one of the things we're going to talk about is the O'Hare Airport expansion plan. Did American just kill it? We'll find out about that. Tom Skilling says that there is snow coming. The president has just been having one of those meetings with a bipartisan group of legislators talking about gun reform here and not to be afraid of the NRA. And he is advocating for guns in nightclubs now, not just guns in schools, guns in nightclubs.
I thought the president, yeah, that's right, the president's for guns in schools. Now it's for guns in nightclubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you might as well have them in churches and movie theaters, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, wherever people are, we got to protect ourselves.
Yes, that's what he's
saying. That's one way to go.
Saying, yeah. So, well, Texas doesn't have these problems, though, because they've got, loose gun laws, except for that shooting at the last fall at the church.
Except for
the
that one.
Yeah. That one.
So.
All right. Have a good show.
All right. Thank you very much.